In high school, this time of year was traditionally for us a loaded one, Purim. Not only because it was the one time of the year the students were not only given a hall pass to drink liquor, but even more revered and treasured was the tradition of something called the Purim Spiel. Now the word Spiel is a German and Yiddish word for a theatrical play, and Purim was the moment when the students of the school were given permission, yes, reluctantly, but permission, to put on a play that would roast the rabbis of the school. As you can imagine, it was a moment that was wrought with tension. Us wanting to be funny, but not too nasty, and the rabbis wanting to be appreciative of the humor, but not get angry. My last year, it changed. First, the spiel, the play went on as planned, and in hindsight, I have to admit it was probably a bit too sharp, but as it ended, unscripted, the head of the school, the Rosh HaYeshiva, a 6'5" imposing man in a black beard, a black coat, a black hat, who seldom was heard speaking outside of his Talmud classes, stepped up to the stage and called out, "Now it's our turn." And he tells us the following story. A student, Shimon, comes to class to write his final exam. Hours later, he comes to the front and hands in the paper. "Rebbe," he says, "I finished the exam." "Good," the rabbi says to him. "Did the questions give you any trouble?" "No," Shimon says, "I only had trouble with the answers." It's not a great joke. But in time, with the gift of hindsight, I'm not sure it was meant to be funny. I think it's better seen as a lesson. Because in life, it's not the answers, but the questions. Of late, one of the people who is enjoying a revival of appreciation is the Canadian philosopher and English professor Marshall McLuhan. There's lots to say about him, but for this morning, let's deal with one dimension of his signature thought. The medium is the message. By McLuhan's thinking, the introduction of television and the electronic age, but better known to us now as the social media and digital revolution, that what counted was not what people said or they did on this platform, but their desire to be on it. That fame for nothing other than being seen was the age that we were falling into. In other words, how much of you is in the medium is the measure of your success from the medium. It's not that often that someone is so deeply, profoundly prescient, but Marshall McLuhan was. Our time that we live in is a star-drunk one. We live in a world filled with athletes and models and influences who are all fighting for your attention, and we give it to them. The funny thing is, of course, that McLuhan was right. To be successful in a world of screens, you have to be seen all the time. The wider implication of this is the implication of conflation, that people who are famous, who by some genetic lottery or some other can throw a ball better than 99.9% of the world, or they can sing better than most people, or read a script and act it out better than most people, are also believed by many of us to be better informed, smarter, and simply better than the rest of us. As a result, lots of people take what Gigi Haddad and Mark Ruffalo and Bradley Cooper and Cynthia Nixon, what they have to say about Israel, as if there is so much wiser and better informed than you are. But even a small sample of how talented people ruin their lives should be more than enough to dispel the idea that they're smarter or better than you are. Which is why this past year's Oscars should have won Best Comedy. In they came, the actors wearing their Red Ceasefire pins proudly. A Jewish director telling us that he knows better what Judaism and the Shoah actually means. And the sheer preening presumption of it all. They're assuming people care what they think is only dwarfed by the number of people who believe what they say somehow matters, which makes things painfully clear to us. The calculus is that Jews occupy a sweet spot in the world of hate. We are small enough to be persecuted and just big enough to be noticed. Sure, people can oppose what the Russians are doing in the Ukraine, what the Chinese are doing in Tibet and to the Uyghurs, what this Arab state or another are doing to each other. But in a world of 100 million Russians, of 600 million Arabs, and 1.5 billion Chinese, no amount of pushing will get you very far. But the Jews, large enough to be accomplished, but small enough to be pushed and abused, can be hated with little consequence to the haters. This is very true in a world of government where increasingly democratic countries, the United States and Canada, for example, are, as the current Israeli joke says, fighting for a two-state solution, Michigan and Illinois. For the uninitiated, Michigan and Illinois are swing states with very large Muslim populations, but the idea works in Canada too. More than anything, politicians want to get elected and then reelected, and the electoral numbers are against us. The changes we are seeing here reflect this chilling truth. That in 1939, there were 15 million Jews in a world of 2 billion people. In 2024, there are 15 million Jews in a world of 8 billion people. But now, like my high school rabbi's joke goes, it's time to give attention to the questions of this hour. Why does the Trudeau government use casualty figures provided to them by Hamas without even a hint of skepticism? How is it possible that a single statistician from Wharton Business School managed to do what no government has been willing to do and analyze the numbers to some very logical suspicions? Why is little to no pressure being put on the people who launched this war to surrender, to disentangle themselves from population centers, to stop capturing and then reselling humanitarian aid on the black market in Gaza? Why is every finger pointed at the Jews? Why is Hamas listed as a terrorist group by Canada, but not treated like one? If the reason for all the above is tied with an argument about an occupation, Israel does not occupy Gaza. And Egypt has a larger and more formidable and secure border with Gaza than Israel ever did, much to our great pain. Let me be clear. It is inarguable at this point that we are swimming in a flood of anti-Semitism. When I walk through this neighborhood and see posters of Israeli hostages defaced, this is not a crisis of politics or a disagreement about policy, but bold-faced Jewish hatred. The Hamilton Jewish Film Festival was canceled this week. Why? They couldn't give assurances for the safety of the people who were going to attend. Do you want to start imagining what this year's walk with Israel is going to look like? Protest crowds now gather in front of synagogues and Jewish schools to block the entry of people entering. The largest French language newspaper in this country published the horrific and blatant anti-Semitic caricature just this past week. And this week, when an NDP MP was asked about the horrific rise in hate crimes against Canadian Jews, citizens of this country, he said, first, we have to save Gaza. Anti-Semitism is embedding itself in this country in ways none of us could have imagined even 2 years ago. And if the people who govern this country don't stop it, and quickly, if it's not already too late, it will be a very short one to nowhere for us. Now, I know as a general rule that Jews, when given the choice, would prefer bad news over good news. But this evening, the Jewish world will be celebrating Purim and has a message for you and I, one which is very important for you to hear. Apart from the mitzvah of reading the Megillah, of giving food and charity, is the well-known practice of wearing costumes. The paradox of the costume is this: by covering ourselves, we give our permission for our deeper selves to come forward. But not surprisingly, the Hebrew conveys this idea better and deeper. The wearing of a costume is called lehitchapes. The searching for something is called lichapes. And that is because a costume by itself doesn't have courage. A costume by itself doesn't have strength. But if you're prepared to search inside of yourself, you will discover what is already there. Is it really any surprise then that the entire genre of superheroes were created by Jews just before the Second World War? Superman by Siegel and Schuster, Batman by Kahn and Finger, Captain America by Kurtzberg and Simon, because the costume opens a window to the hopeful, to the power that is within you to stand and withstand a world that can turn at times dangerous and perfidious. And if anyone ever needed the hope to stand up to those things, it's been the Jews, then and now. On Purim, we are reminded of the outrageous ability that we have to endure and persist and overcome what is in our way, both as people and as a people. Make no mistake, at times I feel as you do, the feeling that there are dark clouds gathering in too many places at too many times. And it's not your imagination, because they are. Now, this past week, I returned from Israel along with my wife, Lisa. There are no direct flights there. The connection times are wrought with delays and canceled flights. In other words, these days getting to Israel requires some determination. When you arrive, the airport is empty, a sign that being there isn't what it once was. But we had to go. Dear friends of ours had a daughter who was getting married, and I had promised to do their wedding. "Please," I said to the bride-to-be, "try to find another rabbi just in case something happens with my flight." "Shlili," she said to me, "not a chance. We'll wait for you." That evening, under the stars that shone on our ancestors so many thousands of years ago, and in the same language that they spoke, as the ceremony was coming to its close, I told them and the 250 people who were there, searching for a reason to celebrate in a very dark time, these words: that I wanted them to know how important it was for us to be here on that evening, to cross continents and oceans, but not only because of our love for this beautiful couple. Another reason called me to leave my congregation of many wonderful Jewish families. And that is despite the threats that hang over our heads and the fear that is in front of Jews everywhere. To be here is to show our hope in the future. That before us stands two Jews who in this dark hour are choosing to build their Jewish home, and we are charged to meet their conviction and never accept despair. The day that we were leaving, we made our way to one of the many impromptu memorial sites in Tel Aviv, and on it were the images of women and children, the young and the old, who were victims of October the 7th, and the pictures of some of the over 250 soldiers who have given their lives since the start of the war. And on one place by a family of a fallen soldier by the name of Yaakov Tsinani were these words that he was fond of saying: "Besof hakol yeh beseder," in the end, everything will be good. And if things aren't yet good, it only means you haven't reached the end, which in the end turns out to be the answer to every question. Shabbat Shalom.